Hello, young lady. Thank you for joining us on the Jim Stroud Show. Please tell us, who are you and what do you do?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jim. I'm Amy Travis. I am a Christian conservative. I've been working recently to help other individuals publish their own books, but I've written several myself. So I'm the author of The Pursuit of Liberty, Protecting Our God-Given Rights Before It's Too Late. So if I can just...
Yes. Yes. Proud. Show it up.
So I go through a lot of the hot topics as far as transgenderism, the abortion debate, socialism, capitalism. And I talk about the separation of church and state debate and really the protection of our religious freedom and how important it is. And all kind of fun stuff like that, you know, your basic dinner time conversation.
Oh, yeah.
All the topics you avoid.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
At Thanksgiving dinner, yeah.
Now, one of your books really caught my eye, too. It was What in the World? Unmasking Truth in a Morally Bankrupt Culture. Great, great title. Very appropriate these days. It made me think of a few things. Like, the world is like moving, it seems like it's moving in warp speed. Like there's no going back. Over the years, and especially during the Democrat administrations, there's been a movement to remove God from our everyday lives. Who do you think is leading, or who do you think is behind this movement? And what would it benefit us as a society to have a godless society?
Well, it doesn't benefit anyone, and it never has. And in fact, and I know this is hotly debated, but biblical Christianity is the only religious system that supports democracy worldwide. And, you know, we've found throughout history that when any government that attempts to remove Judeo-Christian principles, such as the protection of human life, such as the ability to own property, such as religious freedom, it never fares well for those citizens. And that's exactly what we're seeing.
Yeah.
And if you go back to the topic of separation of church and state, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about that. And it's understood in our culture that that's to mean that there's not to be any influence of Christianity, that that's what that means. But that's not at all what that means. And in fact, it's a very dangerous interpretation. Like I explained, it does not bode well. You know, we see this in Venezuela, we see this in Cuba, we saw this in Germany. But the separation of church and state is not a leftist ideology. Separation of church and state was introduced by the founding fathers because they knew they came from tyranny. They understood what state-run religion was. And basically, it has nothing to do with God. State-run religion is about the government replacing God. And
yes.
So...
Yes.
And that's what we're seeing actually around the world, is the attempts of government to replace God, to become our savior, to become our provider and our protector. And, you know, the funny thing about it, so that the church and state, separation of church and state debate goes back to actually the First Amendment. It says that Congress shall not make any laws regarding religion. You know, they had come from, the founding fathers had come from England, where there was state-run religion. So the people in our society that are saying that that is meant to not allow for any influences of Christianity, what they're basically saying is that that is to protect the government from Christianity.
Hmm.
But if you think about it, that's kind of ridiculous. The separation of church and state was always about protecting the individual from the government.
I couldn't agree more. As you said that, I was thinking I had a great idea for a t-shirt. It would be God is greater than government, you know,
Ooh.
And I can see that
Absolutely.
Really triggering a lot of people. Because you said for a lot of people, it's like government is the answer to everything. Everything is a government program, you know,
yes.
Fix everything. And I think people don't realize that the more, the bigger government is, the lesser your individual rights become. It certainly seems that way to me. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we see that. And, you know, I actually had the opportunity to travel to Cuba in 2015. Mm. And, you know, one of the first things that they did during the revolution, well, the first thing is they cut off the food supply as a means to force submission.
Really?
But the next thing they did, yes, is they leveled churches and they slaughtered pastors, because God is seen as an affront to dictatorship, to
wow.
tyranny. And that's why it's so important that we protect Christianity and biblical Christianity. Unfortunately, in our culture, we've kind of sadly created our own brand where, you know, Jesus,
a commercial version.
Yes, exactly. And it's just so important. And we're seeing that in struggles everywhere, that the government is trying to replace God.
Yeah, it's curious. I don't know if anyone ever noticed. Well, I'm sure some people have noticed this. Like when the pandemic was in full swing and the politicians started asserting more and more power, I would see things like churches being closed down, of course, which really irked me. But churches would be closed down, but liquor stores would still be open. Marijuana stores would still be open. Walmarts and other big stores would be open. And the cynical side of me made me think that they, those institutions had a better lobbying. they're actively lobbying Washington to stay open more so than churches were, or they're paying, a lot of people paying off, a lot of companies like that were paying off politicians to make sure that they stayed open. Is that a cynical view, or do you think it's more realistic view?
Unfortunately, I completely agree with you. I think what happened was very intentional. There was a lot of planning that went into it. And if you look at everything governments worldwide were doing, it was to keep us sick and dependent on the government. And that's why gyms weren't open. That's why churches weren't open. And that's why we had access to drugs and alcohol, but not health, not gyms, and not health food.
Sure. It's like they want to keep us down, so to speak, because we're more pliable, able to be manipulated exactly. in that situation. When you look back at the past 2-4 years, so much has changed. Like I said before, like warp speed, but it really, really has changed quite a bit. If you look at the Biden administration, mm-hmm. and there's only been, we're only a year in, and then you look at the administration prior with Trump, even though, you know, love him or hate him, you could make a really good argument that the nation was prosperous under Trump more so than it is now under Biden. It certainly didn't have the inflationary issues. Some of the things that stand out to me comparing the two administrations, you look at things like gas, groceries, lumber, those kind of prices going up to a whole new high. Some places you can't buy furniture and have it delivered the next day. You have to wait several weeks. Mm-hmm. For it to get here. Some people are losing their jobs because they won't comply with the vaccine mandate and so forth. And if one isn't careful, you could sort of look at situations in different places around the country and think that you're in the 1940s America, or in the 1940s rather, dealing with the Nazis per se, than in America. What's amazing to me though, but all these changes is how quickly things have changed. Like it seemed like it just like overnight. I know it wasn't literally overnight, but it seems like overnight all these changes happened. How do you think we got here so quickly?
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, truly.
But it has to do with government controls everything in our lives, as we're seeing, and it controls the economy. So governments actually control wealth. They can make you rich or poor, just basically like marionettes on a puppet string, right? So I am a huge fan of Donald Trump, and Yeah, I don't care what he did or said personally or before that, because he ran the country like a boss.
Yep.
And so what we're seeing now is a lot of very terrible policies. And, you know, in my book, I talk about the frailty of freedom. And I use Venezuela as an example. You know, Venezuela was a democracy, and it wasn't all that long ago. And mm-hmm. so, you know, there are a couple of things that happen when you allow bad actors into government. And, you know, talk about being pessimistic. What I've realized in the last couple of years is that the government is basically thieves, you know, to put it bluntly. There are some good people in government, but, you know, there is a lot of terrible corruption. And what's interesting is when I travel to other countries, you don't have to convince people who live in, for example, I've been to Uganda and Rwanda and like I mentioned, Cuba and different places in, you know, it was in Europe. You don't have to convince people that their government is trying to steal from them and their government is corrupt. And for whatever reason, as Americans, I think that's been hid for a long time, but that's something that's come out in the past couple of years. It's just the level of exposure of the corruption. And, you know, we're seeing that in Canada. Like, who knew?
For Trudeau to outright come out and refuse to talk to the truckers, I think was a really big letdown for the entire country and showed everybody in the U.S. here how weak he really is.
I seen what they did to your reporter in Canada. I mean, to be frank, it pissed me off. You know, seeing her get shot point blank with that tear gas canister. And that's why you guys have become my favorite news network.
Canadians inspired me. I'm a pastor of local church. Not this Sunday, but Sunday before. You know what was our worship song? Oh, Canada. Whole church were singing, Oh, Canada. People were crying. This is what we need to sacrifice for one another.
Honestly, this whole thing wouldn't have been possible without the Canadian truck drivers, our brothers and sisters to the north doing what they've done. I mean, they inspired the world. They ignited all of us.
That's the reason I'm here, watching what went on there. It was a catalyst for me.
So you mentioned Canada. Like Canada is becoming a dictatorship right before our very eyes. Quite recently, I'm sure a lot of the viewers here know about it, but for those who don't know, there's been this trucker convoy, which has been placed on, I think, different Canadian bridges in different locations. And they're just sort of parked their trucks and they're not moving, pretty much causing the economy to come to a standstill because they are protesting the tyrannical mandates that are going on there. And quite recently, actually, as of I think yesterday, at least at the point of this recording, Trudeau, who's running Canada, has made motions to seize people's bank accounts if they're protesting, taking away their insurance so they can't have a livelihood anymore as a trucker. Is really, really scary. But I think the scariest part of it all, at least from my perspective, is how silent America has been in response. You know, how come there's no outrage from politicians on the right? You know, I would expect Republican politicians to say that's crazy, that's tyrannical. I would expect some Democrat politicians to say the same. But overall, it's like we're just quiet. And we're just sort of watching it like it wouldn't happen over here. I mean, why do you think we're so quiet? The politicians are so quiet about it.
Well, I think what's interesting is I don't know that the politicians are quiet necessarily because I see things on Instagram. But again, it is our state-run media that is controlling the narrative. So I think there are a lot of people on the right speaking out. But the average American, unless you turn off the television and, you know, you look for alternate sources for your news and you do your own research, you're not going to hear what's actually happening there. And that's what's really scary is big tech has really shut down the communication and is controlling the narrative. And we're one step behind Canada, and it is really frightening.
Yeah, it truly is. To your point about big media and the censorship that goes on. Two really big examples stand out to me. One is the laptop from hell, as they kept calling it.
Oh, yeah.
Hunter Biden's laptop, all that incriminating evidence about him, and which is putting him and his father in a very embarrassing and very legal jeopardy for the different things they've done. But an even more recent example is the Durham report. Now, for those who don't know, because the censorship is so real, I forget his first name. Is it John Durham?
Yes.
Okay, John Durham, who works in the Department of Justice, has been investigating Hillary Clinton and the whole Russia collusion story. And after so many years of methodical work, what he's come away with is definitive proof that Hillary Clinton spied on Trump when he was a candidate and continued to spy on him as president. Mm-hmm. Now, you would think that someone like Hillary Clinton, or anyone really, who's caught spying on a presidential candidate and spying, literally spying on the White House for the purpose of finding dirt to discredit him further, would be on the headline, it would be headlines all over the world. But for the most part, it's been pretty quiet. It's not the bombshell news that you used to, you know, they would say to hype the story. I think it really unnerves me how stories that big can just be hushed away by the mainstream. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. It's terrifying. And Jim, are you familiar with the Mockingbird Project back in the 50s?
Yes, I believe that was a CIA project to spread propaganda.
Yes.
I thought that it was a matter of real concern that planted stories intended to serve a national purpose abroad came home and were circulated here and believed here, because this would mean that the CIA could manipulate the news in the United States by channeling it through some foreign country. Now, we're looking at that very carefully.
Do you have any people being paid by the CIA who are contributing to a major circulation American journal?
We do have people who submit pieces to other two American journals.
Do you have any people paid by the CIA who are working for television networks?
This, I think, gets into the kind of getting into the details, Mr. Chairman, that I'd like to get into in executive session.
At CBS, we had been contacted by the CIA. As a matter of fact, by the time I became the head of the whole news and public affairs operation in 1954, the ships had been established, and I was told about them and asked if I'd carry on with them.
We have...
And so that's really where I think they got control of the corporate media, or the state-run media, as I say. And, you know, on the positive end, because we could just all curl up in a ball and cry all day when we look at these things, but I think a lot of Americans are waking up to what is happening and realizing that that is propaganda, and that it's not the truth, and that you have to use some discernment and some wisdom, and you just can't trust everything you hear. So that's the good end of things. But yes, the Durham report, so we've known this for what I would say about 5 years. Trump has come out and said that at the beginning. So do you know what the difference between a conspiracy theory and the news is?
No, what's the difference?
About 6 months.
But I'm gonna use that one.
That's pretty good. The answer used to be a year, but we're at about 6 months now.
You know, of all the major news outlets that are out there, CBS, NBC, CNN, all the big names, they're all pretty much owned by, I think, six companies.
Most
of the media.
Remarkable? And that includes Fox News. They're in that, you know, although they do allow, there's a lot of truth that comes out, but you know, again, it's still corporate media.
Yeah, Pretty much. And a lot of people, Fox has fallen out of favor of a lot of conservatives, actually, over the past couple of years, especially. But it when I realized, when I found out that the majority of the news is run by six companies, and that five of those six lean left and Fox is leaning towards the right, traditionally speaking, anyway, it really helped me to understand why so much of the media hates Fox so much, because their narratives speak against what the left's narratives are.
Right.
You know? At least that's been my thought. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And but that's another thing where I think we have been lulled in America into realizing that. Like you said, five families control our corporate media. And, you know, so I think that that's one of the things that came out during the Trump era was just, I know that he declassified a lot of things as he was leaving office. So I think the veil has been lifted. And sure, it's positive in the sense that we now know what's going on. We know what our government's up to. We know what our corporate media is up to. But at the same time, it's very disheartening because we know what we know what they're up to.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting times, as they say, because the way the media frames stories or just keeps things out of the news, it really is a sort of mind control, in a way, because absolutely. If you want to know you want to find something out, the first thing people do is they go to Google and Google it. But if Google doesn't want you to see some information, you're going to walk away thinking a certain way, not because you've seen objective truth, but because you saw only what they wanted you to see. It's really unnerving, I think.
It is. And if I could just kind of go off on a little bit of a tangent.
Please.
You know, what's interesting is that this is all predicted in scripture. So.
Tell me more.
So as far as biblical prophecy, so, you know, I grew up probably in my teenage years is when I first heard about, you know, what was going to happen in the end times. And a lot of us said, oh, well, that'll never happen in my lifetime. And one of the things is the rise of the Antichrist in the one world government. And so literally until 2 years ago, I could not have pictured anything that would happen that would affect the entire world at the same time. And here we are. And so, you know, this era has really ushered in a lot of awareness. And we're living in the last days. And what's fascinating is it's all predicted in scripture. Mm. And I've been following a lot of events in the Middle East. So, Jim, are you familiar with Happening Now with Pastor Jack?
Happening Now. Is that the Canadian preacher who was arrested because he wouldn't close his church during the pandemic?
No, this is a pastor in Southern California. And then Amir Safati, who is a commander in the Israeli army.
Hmm.
Now, Jack Hibbs, I just remembered his name. So because Amir is, you know, located in the Middle East and has done a lot of research, there are a lot of things that are happening. And that's what I think a lot of believers in America sometimes miss is that, you know, we're really not mentioned a whole lot in the end time events. It's really focused on the Middle East. And so if you want to know what's happening, you have to watch Israel. And so there are a lot of things that are coming to play. And, you know, even the peace agreements that President Trump was able to negotiate, you know, that plays in the sense that Israel has to be prosperous and thriving before these last events. And so that is what's happening, thanks to the Abraham Accords. So, you know, everything's lining up. We're not there yet, but we are in what would be considered the birth pains as far as biblical prophecy.
Wow, that's that's unnerving. Well, you know, or also you can see it's good news because, you know, who wants to stay here forever the way things are?
The Jim Strouse Show will return after these messages. This episode of the Jim Strouse Show brought to you by Conservative Television of America, working hard to stick socialism where the sun don't shine. Conservative Television of America is now available on Fire TV Stick, Roku, and on the Conservative Television of America website. Tune in now at www.ctva.tv. Conservative Television of America, we say what you're thinking.
Exactly. What are some stories you think that the American public should know more about or should research further that they have no clue about because the mainstream media doesn't want people to know about?
Oh, that's a really good question.
Mm.
I would say all of it.
Okay.
I would say everything that you hear in the mainstream news, you need to challenge. For example, the narrative that the 2020 election, that it wasn't stolen. There is so much evidence, it's like drinking water out of a fire hose.
Sure.
But because it's been pushed back on and it's been hidden, that is something that if you're not paying attention, you're going to think, oh yeah, there's nothing to see here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that that's still, you know, I hear murmurings that is still, a lot of states are doing forensic audits and that they are finding the truth and uncovering what really happened. So that's all we can, you know, hope and pray for is that the truth will be revealed. So that's a big one right there. And then, even as far as the Canadian truckers, you know, the narrative in the news is that these are, you know, that they're racist, which is crazy.
Right.
And I don't know, Jim, if you heard just this morning, Tamara, who, I don't remember her last name, who is the organizer, and the initial push for this convoy, she was arrested.
Yeah, I did hear that.
And, you know, there are no grounds for that, of course.
No.
But so I would just encourage, you know, anyone watching your program, I'm sure has a certain level of savvy that they understand that you just can't take for granted anything that you really hear in the news.
Yeah, I think to your point is really important to do your own research. I've noticed how, and I just because I'm just so curious, I noticed how like on some of the mainstream channels, they'll say that the truckers are these evil racists and they're going to get violent and which all this kind funny of stuff. But then when you look at other sources who actually maybe are live streaming the event, mm-hmm. are talking about it from a bird's eye view, I mean, from a first person perspective, actually being there, you'll see footage of bouncy houses because they brought their kids there.
You exactly.
Know, people are dancing in the street like a little party. Somebody brought a hot tub there. And I'm like, how can you say these are really dangerous, violent extremists if they have their kids there, if they have bouncy houses and they have hot tubs? I mean, it really showed me how far somebody's in control of the media because it's not people rooted in reality. It's people who want to who want the public to have a certain opinion.
Exactly. I think that's a very good point. And, you know, what's really scary is people are saying, no, don't believe your eyes. Don't believe what you see. We're going to tell you what to believe. And, you know, one of the rules of thumb that I use for discerning the truth, because I hear a lot of people say, oh, I don't know what to believe. And it's true. However, I don't think that's a good excuse not to search out the truth. And so sometimes I think we use that as a defense, like, oh, I don't know what to believe, so I'm not going to believe anything. But one of the things, you know, personally that I do is I always look at the accounts. I look at what someone has to lose or gain by telling their story.
Mm-hmm.
So when you understand how corporate America works and how fear is a moneymaker and a way of controlling society, and that they can pretty much push on you, as we saw through the COVID-19 pandemic, that, you know, if they can keep you fearful, then they can sell you just about anything. So, you know, when I look at interviews with Canadian truckers, you know, they're the ones I believe because they have the most to lose. They really don't have anything to gain by,
right.
I mean, they're protesting for their freedom. So, but the reason they're at where they're at is because they don't have anything left to lose.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wow. It's crazy. Yeah. Something else you said too made me think about this. With so much of what people think being shaped by the media, it just seems like right and wrong shifts is based on opinion. You know, mm-hmm. It's like today is at one point it's not okay to have, you know, multiple wives, for example. You know, one wife, one husband, and that's marriage. And then nowadays it's becoming a thing. There's a show actually on the Discovery Channel called Sister Wives, where people are pursuing marriages with multiple partners. And then there's also this phenomenon called swinging, where people are having sexual adventures, I'll just say, mm-hmm. with other couples, other married couples. So if one married couple think another married couple is hot, then, you know, they may switch up husbands for the night, or it's kind of crazy. Those weren't the values that I grew up with, but now it seems like it's becoming more and more accepted. And actually the most disturbing thing I'm seeing, and it hasn't caught on yet, thank God, but I see a push for this, and that's trying to normalize pedophilia. Right? I don't know if you've heard of this, but there, pedophilia is always pedophilia. It's always wrong to me ever since, you know, I've learned of it. But they're trying to rebrand the term pedophilia and calling it instead minor attraction, saying that that's more of an acceptable term for people who have an attraction for children, a sexual attraction for children. And so they're trying to, I keep seeing reports of that, you know. And I find that really disturbing that people are trying to rebrand it to make it acceptable. I find it disturbing whenever a pedophile is caught in charged. I'm like, why is this still a thing? Why is it still overlooked and excused? I was talking with a friend of mine just yesterday about at CNN, for example, there were three pedophiles working at CNN. And I'm like, one is a coincidence. I mean, once is shocking. Two is a coincidence. But when you have three, that's a pattern. And I'm like, it's just so bizarre to me. What have you heard about this? I feel like I'm rambling. But what have you heard about the growing trend?
No, you're absolutely right. That is, and I agree with you. That is probably the most disturbing trend, is the normalizing of pedophilia. And just to speak to your broader point, you know, one thing I talk about a lot in my books is the natural order. So that's what we're getting away from, is God established a natural order for our protection. So if you look in the first three chapters of Genesis and other places, like in the Ten Commandments, you see some basic things. Number one, that God created us male and female. The fact that he created marriage between a man and a woman in a committed, mutually exclusive relationship, and that he told us to fill the earth and to multiply. And then also you see in the Ten Commandments, do not murder, do not steal. So that's what I would define as a natural order. And what I think is lost in our society today is, because we don't like to be told what to do, right? So we're like, you know, God can't tell me how to live my life. But what is lost in that is the fact that the natural order is to protect us. So anytime you try to circumvent the natural order, that is the guise that's used for the strong to exploit the weak. And we see that with pedophilia, like you said, you know, if marriage is between a man and a woman in a mutually exclusive relationship, then any sexual acts beyond that are going to hurt us. They're harmful. They're going to allow the weaker of the population to be exploited. And that's what we're seeing with the children today. And same with transgenderism. And the point I like to make about that, that I don't hear a lot of people talking about, is, you know, when you look at the push for the normalization of it, who do you think that is benefiting? So for example, is it benefiting a 13-year-old who hasn't fully developed yet, 13-year-old girl, let's say, who likes sports, who likes hanging out with the guys? Do you think it's benefiting her thinking that maybe she's really a boy? Or is it benefiting the pharmaceutical companies, the medical industry that are making billions of dollars off of this? And so, again, I always take it back to the natural order, in that, you know, when God says no, what he's saying is don't do this because it will hurt you.
Yeah. I think money is a very strong motivator. Mm-hmm. I happen to know that in terms of treating gender dysphoria. The number of clinics that can treat that, or, you know, for lack of a better word, administer sex changes has grown. Mm-hmm. So that's an upward trend. And if there's money to be made in that, then you certainly expect more supportive articles for that, because it supports somebody's bottom line. Just as with, it's unpopular to say this, just as the vaccine industry, I mean, they're making a ton of money. And when you have to have booster after booster, you know, one shot, one booster, two booster, now talking about fourth and fifth booster, and then a booster in infant children, you know, I think it's, at some point, it's gone beyond safety, and this becomes a profit margin. You know, if you get an entire population hooked on a booster shot, whether they need it or not, I mean, that's, you can go back and forth on that forever. But something like that, that becomes like a cash cow for these pharmaceutical companies. And if money is a motivator for a pharmaceutical company and not public safety, that has to be really scrutinized and examined, because that is a great danger to your society overall. Wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And yes, to your point, you know, you always want to follow the money. And again, like I said before, as far as judging who has the most to lose, you know, in my opinion, the response to COVID-19 or COVID-19 itself, it was never about public safety. It was always about control, and it was always about money. And if you look, the pharmaceutical industry is really monopolizing America. And they are, the level of control that they've exerted over us is very, very scary. And I think, you know, there's not a whole lot we can do in the big picture, but I think the more that we realize that we have to take control for our own health and our own safety. And, you know, that was part of the fear that was used. Oh, you know, get this for grandma so you don't kill grandma. Well, we know now that that was never true, that was all about fear. And I think we just have to be aware, and we have to realize what's going on, and we have to be discerning.
Yeah. I think to your point, I think people also have to be aware that, at least as American citizens, you're born with certain rights. They're given by God, not by the government. So the government can't take away rights that you were born with here in the country. And I think people have lost sight of that. I think that goes to the thing of what we said earlier about God being greater than government. A lot of people have the perception that the government has the legal right to take certain rights away from us, like the Second Amendment, for example, comes to mind, or freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. Mm-hmm. These are things that we have, that we're born to have because we're American citizens, and the government doesn't. The government is asserting itself as if it can take it away, but legally it cannot. I mean, that's in the founding constitution of our country. And I think people lost sight of that. I mean, I don't know this for certain because I'm so far removed. How, to your knowledge, is how well is the Constitution taught in American schools these days?
It's not taught at all. And I know that there is some movement to bring it back into the schools, but I think what we're learning is, you know, we have state-run schools, and until we can pass some form of school choice where our children are not subjected to attending a school based on their zip code, that there is some accountability. I'm really glad my children are raised and out of school, because I think I'd have to pull them out of public schools because it's not being taught. And I think the root cause for that is all of safety and prosperity. At some level, when you get into the second and third generation, it becomes a detriment to society because we feel safe, and it's a false security. And if I can just tell you a quick conversation I had with our youngest is 19. And, you know, I hope your viewers take this in the vein that was said, but he said, Mom, he said, I think they need to bring back bullying. He said, because kids my age, they don't know how to deal with anything.
You know, wow.
I'm not advocating for bullying. Wow. I thought that was an exceptional point that we've created a generation and generations of very soft, emotionally fragile human beings.
Where everyone gets a trophy, no matter what.
Yes. Yeah.
It gives them unrealistic expectations. Like, they're going to go through life thinking they're going to get a prize no matter what. And then as soon as they get into the real world and they don't get the job they want or the promotion they want, or they can't afford to get the car they want, they're ready to cry foul and blame someone. It's how I grew up and how things are now are so different. And I don't think how I grew up was all that radical, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I grew up thinking that you may not get everything you want, but you got to work for whatever you do get. And sometimes you don't win, and that's okay. That makes you go back and study harder, work harder, and get it next time. But I think now everybody wants this, you know, trophy today, no matter how they performed. And it just warps their perceptions of how the world really is.
Absolutely. So we've lost the sense of resilience.
Yes.
There is no resiliency. And I think that's one of the greatest things that I've learned from traveling and from being in different countries is, you know, until you've gone to an underdeveloped, until you visit an underdeveloped country, you don't really have an appreciation of what we have here. And we take things for granted. Back in 2019, I was in a village in Uganda that did not have access to clean water, running water. And, you know, that was a game changer for me because I had never seen that before. And you can't unsee it. Yeah. And I think we've really taken for granted, you know, there have been some very positive things, at least in the developing years of this country. You know, road systems. If you've ever gone on vacation, you know, if you've gone to Punta Cana, you understand not everyone has the benefit of paved roads and
exactly,
you know, and traffic signals and like little things. And what's really scary about that is we are in danger of losing those things because we don't, they're undervalued. And I just think we never thought we would have to fight for those basic freedoms in this country, like freedom of speech, for example. But I think now's the time we have to fight. You know,
exactly. You know, one thing that would be perceived as radical, as something that would mark you as a right wing extremist, I think today, even though it's laughable in my thinking, it's just based on how I grew up. If you had a group of people stand together and just hold up the flag and do a pledge of allegiance, and do that on a school campus, you probably might, in some schools, you might even get arrested for that, pledging allegiance to the flag of your own country. It really, and that's not even an exaggeration. I think that could actually happen in some places. And I remember when I was in school growing up, that's the first thing you did when school started. You did a pledge of allegiance. You stood up, did a pledge of allegiance to the flag. And then you sat down and, you know, did your work, whatnot. And it really bothers me how far we've come from just that. I mean, it's like we're training our children to hate America in a lot of ways. I mean, how can a country stand when you're training people that America is evil and just a totally racist, evil country? How can a country survive if you train people to hate it who live here?
Exactly. And it's extremely unnatural. It really is. And again, you know, there are forces within our culture, and I can't even explain the root of them. They're trying to normalize things that are not normal. Mm-hmm. And even if you see interviews from people in the Middle East, in war-torn countries, I remember seeing a man from Syria being interviewed, and he said, "We love Syria. We don't want to leave our country." So to not love your country, that's weird. To be very candid, it is not normal. And again, I think it goes back to the level of individual responsibility. So you have to take responsibility for yourself. As a parent, you have to take responsibility for what your children are learning and what they're being taught, because we know now we can't trust the government to train our kids. And I think that's the only way that this cycle is going to be reversed, is if we take individual responsibility, if we take responsibility for our own families, our own communities, because if we don't, it's not going to be good.
I like what you said, responsibility, accountability, because some people believe that the government has the final say over your children and that the government knows what's right for your kids more so than you. There are some people who truly, truly believe that, and a lot of them are on public school boards, to be sure. I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. If someone wanted to get more information about you and about the books you write, how can they find you online?
Sure. So my website is amytravisunlimited.com. Just AMY, Travis, like the boy's name, TRAVIS, unlimited.
Very good.
So thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. You are appreciated. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Same to you.
Well, my time is up. I thank you for yours. I'll see you again real soon right here with a brand new episode. So until next time, bye-bye.